innovate.
Get informed. Contact your local CLSC, Sun Youth, Ami Quebec, Forward House, or Prevention Suicide.
Listening to the Romanian radio show in Montreal, Marca Ro. Ascultați emisiunea de radio Marca Ro pe 90,3 FM CKUT.
Mă-ncremenește în loc. Ce-am așteptat,
שם מסת נימיק נוסף כמבט תעצים גטם נפוי שם ריסיפי בן דופוי קוידום לדושי נבוי ביתם לבצילה Ironien gut so meine Masche Timpul vos plus astus La umbra mare du vos La gare le va un mas Se non c'è tra si sciare Mostro fuare se un corpero bras
Everybody listening to the Romanian radio show in Montreal, Marca Ro.
Hello everyone, good evening and welcome to the Romanian radio show Marca Ro on CKUT 90.3 FM. Bine ați venit la emisiunea de radio în limba română Marca Ro. So we have a special guest tonight and I would like to welcome Steven Eisenberg. Hi, and thank you for your presence here in our radio show. You are a Canadian artist, right? You are a songwriter and a singer, if I'm not mistaken. You are a producer, and can you tell us who is Steven Eisenberg?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Maybe we should get Steven Eisenberg into the studio. He can tell you himself.
Well, unfortunately, the studio is closed, but we do it like over Zoom. So, you know, because it's going to be broadcasted for the Romanian Journalist Association as well. So, welcome to our virtual studio.
Thank you. Well, it's a rather long story, but I can give you the abridged or shortened version. Okay. When I was growing up, my mom was very musical, and she always encouraged her three children, because I have two sisters, to get involved with some aspect of music. So I started actually first playing the mandolin. And the reason it was the mandolin is because my second uncle, kind of, was a teacher of mandolin and had a mandolin children's orchestra. And so basically, I started at 6 years old, learning mandolin, and I was playing all of the Russian and other Romanian and other standards, everything from Boblichka to you name it. I played it, and it was very interesting and very fulfilling. And then by the time I was about 8 or 9 years old, we were playing in some pretty big halls. We played for Expo, which was, I was really young at the time, when it was in Montreal in 67. And you know, we ended up doing a lot. So from there, I just really started to love music and then went and learned violin and started to take violin at school and then played in the Montreal Junior Symphony Orchestra. And I played there for a couple of years and then started to take piano. And piano is what I really loved. And I really got interested in. And I started at McGill at the conservatory and took piano and then started to, by 13, I had already joined a band and I had already started writing songs. So I'm jumping you pretty fast and forward. And I was already writing music by the time I was 13. And my first band, we toured all over the place. And by the time I was, you know, 21 or 22, I got signed by Columbia Records as an artist and had a few singles with Columbia come out successfully. And when I was playing live and I did a few tours, I decided that I wasn't as interested in being out front in front of the audience as I was more interested in being a producer and a songwriter. So I concentrated all of my efforts on my songwriting, and there's a huge, huge story in there. There's not enough time to talk about that, Christian, but what I can tell you is that I was pretty motivated to try to get out there, and navigating a career in music is very difficult. Probably you've known that before or have heard that before. It's very hard because you never know how you're going to get out there. And especially in that time period, you know, it was difficult. So I just made trips to New York back and forth, met music publishers, met a lot of people, but most importantly, sat in on sessions with major bands of the time, like Aerosmith and all these different groups. I met their producers. I met so many different people. And I learned how to produce records, which was the most important thing. And when you can learn how to produce and arrange, you know, slowly you can start to do your own stuff. And that's exactly what I did. And I had no money at the time. I was pretty much broke. I was a poor, starving artist at the time. And coming from that background, I started to produce. And I had my first record that I produced with one of the guys who was from the Stylistics group in Philadelphia, became a big hit called Could It Be Love. And that got me on the map because it made it in about 15, 20 countries. And from there, I ended up writing for Celine Dion and for so many other people.
Why is most difficult now to have a music career than before?
Saturation. There's too much out there because of YouTube and Spotify and you name it. There's just too much music out there. So how the record companies have changed their mindset. Remember that before, because I had a record company distributed nationally. But remember, record companies used to sell digital product, physical product, physical vinyl, CDs, whatnot. That changed quite rapidly and became a virtual market, where it's a digital market, which is very difficult. And so the whole music business shifted. It's shifted into another gear. And instead of the record companies trying to break artists, all they're doing now is looking at the numbers on YouTube, Spotify, and whatnot. And they're using that as a way of making hits. And also, there's no more concentration on real artists these days, and all you get is the hit of the month. So, you know, it's very difficult to come up as an artist in this business unless you're a songwriter. And even if you are a songwriter, well, you really have to have your stuff together in order to be able to get out there with something, because there's so many writing teams and whatnot, and it's just difficult to break into the business. But as you know, by reading music biz stuff, you know that there are a lot of success stories out there in the business, major success stories. And in my time, for my period that I was really hottest, I was a very big success story. I mean, you know, my biggest album that I produced for and signed, in fact, I signed Corneille, who was one of the biggest artists to come out of Montreal in the French-speaking market, R&B, rhythm and blues. And we, our first album in France sold over 1 million copies. And then in total, we sold close to 3 million copies. So it's about being at the right place at the right time. It's about having good ears, understanding artist and repertoire, understanding what you kind of want to do in the music business and know where you want to go, whether it means the business side or the creative side or the writing side. And a little bit of luck, a little bit of some smiles and some help from other people that see you're talented and want to give you a hand. Yeah. I mean, well, I was really...
Yeah. When did you know that you're gonna make it? When were convinced that that was your path? I mean, your career.
Well, there are two different questions. When I was convinced that I was in the right career, and that I had a chance to make it, was the time where I waited outside the Place des Arts to meet Paul Anka, and he was performing at the Place des Arts. And I decided that I wanted to get him one of my tapes, because at that time, in the 70s, early 80s, I was already basically, you know, doing demos and stuff like that. So I got him one of my tapes and had him listen to it. And his people around him listened, but I didn't hear anything back from them until the last day that he was in Montreal. And then I got a call from his attaché. And she said, come to the Place des Arts. He'd like to meet you. And funny enough, there's a whole story to that. But when he finally did meet me, he hadn't heard anything. He never listened. And he was doing two shows that day. So he came backstage between the first and the second show. And he said, he lied down on the couch in the dressing room. There was a piano there, which I didn't realize there would be. And he said to me, so play me what you have. And so I sat down and I played songs for Paul. And then after about half an hour and literally postponing the second show, which is a ticketed show, by around, around half an hour.
Wow.
He says to me, you know what? I really like what you're writing. He says, I really like your songs. He says, I'm going to be in touch with you. Anyways, months go by. I heard nothing. And then finally, I get a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm half asleep. I pick up the phone. I said, who's this? He says, it's Paul. I said, Paul who? He said, Paul Anka. I said, Paul, do you know what time it is? I said, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Where are you? He says, I'm in Las Vegas. I'm in the gambling casino. I said, okay. He says, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, nothing too much. He says, okay. He says, I'm paying your ticket. You're flying to Vegas. And I ended up staying in one of the nicest suites in the Desert Inn in Vegas. And at that moment, when I was in my early 20s, I called home and said, you know what, Mom? Something incredible is going on here. And funny enough, ironically speaking, that was not my break. But it was the answer to your first question. It told me that I had what it took to do what I needed to do.
And what was your break then?
Oh my goodness! I made most of my own breaks. I mean, my first break came from that record that I produced with Lonnie Gamble, who was the guitar player of the Stylistics from Philadelphia. I wrote a song called "Could It Be Love," and it just became a huge hit here in France, number one all over the place, and it got me off the map, not just as a songwriter but as a producer as well. And the record sold extremely well internationally, and it became a gold record in Canada, et cetera. And then I started to produce a number of other different artists and write for different artists. And one of the artists I wrote for at that time was a girl named Nancy Martinez. She was from Montreal, but she was signed to Atlantic Records in the United States. And I wrote a number of hits for her in the States, top 40 in the US. And then I happened to meet Rene Angelil, who is Celine's husband and manager. He was her manager at the time. They were married, maybe. I think they were married. Anyways, we were in the studio and he came in and introduced himself. They were working in a studio next to us and they were finishing off an album by Celine called Incognito. And that album was completely finished. It was being mixed by Aldo Nova, who is a famous guitar, rock guitarist player, and he was working with her. And it was all done. So he said, do you have any songs for Celine? And how come you haven't sent us anything? And I said, well, I didn't actually know how to send you the songs to begin with, because I didn't know him. And so he said, well, can I hear something? So I sat down at the piano and I played him this song. He called Celine to come in the studio too. So I got to meet her at that time. And I played this song for them. And she looks at Renee, and in French, she said, l'album n'est pas fini. And that means the album is not finished. And so that song became D'abord c'est quoi l'amour, which was a huge hit for her. The lyrics were written by a guy named Eddie Marnay, who was from France, originally from Algeria. And I got to meet him. He was a famous, famous lyricist. And I ended up writing many songs with him after, for artists all over the world, from Manu Muscori to you name it. And he became a mentor for me in the business as well. So one step led to the next, and I started to write in all genres. I wrote for Loverboy. Loverboy is a Canadian rock band that made it internationally. They were huge. And I wrote one single for one of their albums. I wrote for many other rock artists as well. And then got into really heavily into more R&B pop oriented material, and just continued to write for different artists all over the world. But funny enough, my main home away from home was Belgium, because it was where Eurodance really started. And so EDM really took off in Belgium with bands like Two Unlimited, Technotronic, and bands like that. And I ended up writing for these bands because I got to know the producers. So these were multi-million selling projects, and I was part of them. So it was a lot of really being at the right place at the right time and just keep going and pushing. And then, you know, at some point in the early 2000s, I actually got a phone call from the head of the video music division in Montreal called Music Plus, which was somewhat like Much Music, but in French. And they said, you know, we got this artist that you really need to listen to. His name is Corneille. And I said, well, what does he do? They said he's from Rwanda, and he's a product of the genocide, the Hutus and the Tutsis, the product of the genocide, and he lost his family. So basically, I went to see him perform, and it was history. I ended up signing him, and he became probably one of the biggest French artists from Montreal.
Do you think Montreal is a good place to start from for, a new artist?
Yeah, Montreal is a total music hotbed. I mean, really, when you think about it, so many bands in history have broken, and artists have broken from here. I mean, really, Cowboy Junkies, all sorts of Celine broke from here. Genesis, the band from England, broke from here. So Montreal is such a music-loving environment, and there have been so many different groups that have come out of this city that have done well on the international level all over the place. And it's surprising, because you always, you know, you ask where they're from a lot of times, and they come from here.
You wrote a lot of songs. Do you have anything you really like? Do you have one the most, I don't know, cherished, your song that you really, really like? The story and everything, like in this bunch of songs, which is it hard to say, for example, I like this song because I don't know, then this happened, or this is the story of this song, or?
Well, every song has its own story. Every song has its own character, but there are certain songs that of course are more special than others, because either the lyrics were really special and they meant something very strong. I love the song that I wrote for Mary Carmen, which is called Entre l'ombre et la lumière. It's a very famous song here in Quebec and in France as well. It's a great lyric, and the music is very, I thought, was produced beautifully. It was my music and Mary Carmen's lyrics. It's being used now. It was just picked up by Cirque du Soleil and is being used for their next production. So I was very honored to have that happen very recently. Look, there's very few French or Francophone artists within the last 10 years that I haven't touched. So basically, I've written for so many. And so it's just basically they all have something special. If you Google my name, either Stephen Tracy or Stephen Tracy Eisenberg, EIS, you'll come up with a website called Discogs, DISCOGS, Discogs. Every songwriter, producer, artist is on Discogs. And you can see I've written under a number of different similar names, because we all do that. And you'll see the body of my work. And there's a lot of songs and productions in there. I was really into funk. I mean, I was into so much, and I loved producing funk. This guy I produced named Maurice Messiah, it was a really cool record called Seventh Heaven that I produced, which was totally a funk kind of project. I'm very diversified in what my taste is and what I like. But for the most part, in that special 80s era, I was writing a lot of rhythm and blues and funk and that type of stuff, because it was what moved me at the time.
Is it different to write music for Francophone artists versus Anglophone artists? Is there any difference when you, for example, you're thinking, oh, I'm going to write a song for Céline Dion, or I'm going to write a song for some Anglophone artist? Do you think like there is a different game in a way?
Yeah, it's an understanding game. Because people who don't come from Quebec or from France for that matter, but more even just from here, don't really understand the character of the actual song itself that has a possibility to work in a country like France, Belgium, Switzerland, French-speaking countries. It's like, for example, when you listen to Russian music, music that comes from Russia or comes from Ukraine or from any of those areas, there's a certain sound and a certain vibe to it. And if you're melodically not in that vibe, it's pretty difficult to write for one of their artists, because they, an Americanized song, they're not going to relate to it, and it won't be the same genre of what they want. Whereas, if you're familiar with what stylistically, but then there's also the other thing is that markets like France are very eclectic. So they don't, that's why you don't hear of a lot of records from here working in France. It just doesn't happen. And you have to understand culturally the market in order to understand what type of an artist or what type of song would work in a territory like that. And it's got a lot to do with your youth culture understanding of what might have a chance in a market like that. And then you still have to deal with how are you going to get it out there. So, it's pretty complicated. I knew when I listened to Corneille that he had a very new soul, NU soul, something that had not been really heard in France, but that France had started to develop a rhythm and blues market in French. And so I took a shot on him because his lyrics were extremely strong. And when we produced the record, when I released it in Montreal on my label, and I released him at the Place des Arts as being the first Black artist to be released at the Place des Arts.
The second part of the interview will be presented next week.
Ascultați emisiunea de radio Marcaro pe 90,3 FM CKUT.
Shaquille, Magic Juice, Footballs in the House. Deci am pierdut tot când am plecat. Nici soarele nu-i pe cer. Și n-am să mă mai trezesc ca să-ți pot zâmbi. Te pup, papa.
Evening, the time run about now on your dial should read 9 p.m. You're listening to Hotel the Blues here on 90.3 CKUT FM, broadcasting from a small wee little house nestled on the side of Montreal's Mont Royal on unceded Mohawk territory. I'm going to be your host for the next couple of hours, Vishal Ramakrishnan, playing for you some of my favorite blues hits, associates, and affiliates. Coming up next, to kick off the program, here he is, the Boogeymaster himself, John Lee Hooker, playing The Motor City is Burning.
You know the big D is burning. Anything in the world that Johnny can do. My hometown's burning down to the ground. West Earl and Vietnam. Well, it started on 12 and Claremont that morning. I just don't know what it's all about. Oh, it started on 12 and Claremont that morning. I don't know what it's all about. The fire wagon kept coming. The sniper just wouldn't let him put it out. Firebomb busting all around me. And soldiers was everywhere. Oh, firebombs falling all around me. And soldiers standing there.